to the west out there in the lawless frontier town of Asheville, where, first of all, I am astounded. Welcome to the show, as usual, Pete.
Pleasure to be here.
I'm astounded 84 officers have quit since January 1st of 2020. I can't ever imagine why that would happen. And now the fallout is the department released a list of crimes that they're no longer going to provide officer response to. And I don't know. I kind of feel like identity theft and, you know, me coming by and Banksying your home would be something you might want an officer to swing by for.
Yeah. Non-emergency, sir. Oh, hang on a second. Hey, put the television down, sir, please. Okay, sorry. So, yeah, $1,000.
Stop. Maybe he needed that television more than you. Consider that?
I should check my privilege. You are correct. This is one of the things, if you've ever been a victim of property crime, by the way, you understand this in a different way than people who have not been victims of property crime. My wife and I, we got burglarized when we were living in Charlotte. They had come into the house. They stole a bunch of stuff. They stole her car. They loaded the car and drove off with it. And when you realize, and these were neighborhood people, and the cops came and they took fingerprints and stuff, but you realize they're not ever going to catch anybody unless they catch some sort of a break. And what this now is doing in Asheville is to say, basically, we surrender. We're not even going to send cops out to investigate this stuff. So on the remarkably slim chance that they may have actually caught somebody, that is now gone. So now there's no chance that they're going to catch somebody. And they're basically deputizing citizens into being their own crime scene investigators. So like one of the crimes that they're not going to respond to any longer is thefts. Thefts under $1,000 where there's no suspect information. That does not include gun theft. So they're still going to come if you get your gun stolen. Stolen vehicles, which, I mean, it's a stolen vehicle that's worth less than $1,000. Like, maybe I'm on board like that, but they're still going to come for that one. But that's a felony. So I worry about people now taking pictures, sending them in an email to cops saying, hey, I had a bunch of stuff stolen and it was valued at, you know, $947. Well, if they've got homeowners insurance or, you know, apartment renters insurance, then minus the deductible, they're going to make some money out of that deal. And there's no, you don't need to offer any proof that the items were actually stolen. So what's going to happen with insurance providers? Are they going to stop paying claims?
You know what? That's a very good point. You know, one of the ones that I hooked on to this morning, that's just kind of the reverse of that, is identity theft. So if you ever dealt with any level of identity theft, one of the things you may be asked to provide to essentially get yourself out of being obligated for a charge is a police report.
Right. You'll still be able to do this online. Yeah, you'll be able to file it online, and I guess they give you a report. I mean, I guess they're going to give you an official police report, but there isn't anybody to ask questions. It's an online form, and so, like, that eliminates that human-to-human interaction. Because what has happened is they've lost, APD has lost 50% of their detectives. So the irony here is that the defund the police people, they were thinking, get rid of all the beat cops, right? Get rid of all of the stormtroopers, the jackbooted thugs patrolling our streets, right? They want to get rid of all of them. But what they actually induced was a reduction in the people that are actually investigating crimes. And so now the chances that you're going to get caught and punished go down. And this is, by the way, what a lot of these LARPing communist temporary anarchist people that are, you know, roaming the streets of Asheville with their tackle box faces, this is what they want. In fact, one of them called into the city council meeting on the phone call because, you know, they're still Zooming it because they're all terrified of COVID still. And there was one guy quoted at the end of the local paper's article, John Robert. He says maybe they're starting to understand that they will be held accountable for their brutality by being legally prosecuted. He said, we want less cops, not more, which would be fewer cops, actually. But he says, I don't think you all have totally grasped that yet. And
I'm sorry, go ahead, finish your thoughts.
Well, no, I
have a question.
I think a lot of citizens have grasped that, and it's why a lot of them are leaving the city.
Can you think of another scenario where there is a collective of government employees where they're unable to fulfill whatever the quote is? And I'll give you an example, because it's the one we hear. we don't have enough teachers, right? Teachers, Houston, or what is it, Texas is coming up here and stealing our teachers. You remember that narrative from a few years ago?
Yeah.
Right, and so the argument was what we have to do is we have to create a scenario where it is a more attractive employment environment. And so people were tripping all over themselves in Raleigh to do that. And then at a local level, districts had to look at that as well as to whether they provided a stipend or what it was. Firefighters, I've seen that as well. But with police, there's no appetite for that. So the idea that Asheville would look at itself and go, you know what, we have a problem here. How do we fix this? And whether it is a leadership problem.
It is a leadership problem.
Money or whatever.
No, it's not money.
But normally you'd make those changes. They have no interest in making those changes.
Correct. Because remember, the way Asheville, the way the city council elections were designed by the Democratic machine here for the last, you know, century was to protect the machine from Republicans ever getting elected. And there have been more, but these were sort of the more conservative blue dog Democrat type of Democrats in the mountains. But what has happened over the last 20 years or so is that the Democratic Party has now been taken over by the progressive wing, and now the infrastructure that was meant to protect the Democrats from being ousted by Republicans by creating sort of an insular primary system that allows them to control candidates and slates and such, that now benefits the progressive wing. And so now they get to run. Right. So now the city council is beholden to this base of moonbats. And this, and so like they literally had, when the new city manager came to town, a black woman, by the way, formerly of Charlotte, and she came to town to be the city manager. They started, you know, pressuring for the defund police and all this and the reparations. And she was not moving quickly enough because she's a professional. And so she was not moving quickly enough. And so they went and put big signs in her front yard, essentially an intimidation tactic to do what we demand you do, city manager. And I'm just trying to imagine the outrage that would have occurred if a bunch of Republicans had targeted the mayor and the city manager's homes with big banners like this, demanding that they do something, cough up a bunch of money, and you know what will happen if you don't.
Well, to be fair, the Democratic Party has a history of sticking things in black leaders' yards.
That is true. Fair enough. Fair point.
So, you know, you go with what you know. At a statewide level, I sent you a message on Twitter about this yesterday because I just – it's one of these stories. It's such a non-story, and now it's turned into some sort of – so during the totality of Roy Cooper's administration, when it comes to officials that he's attempted to name that require approval, legislative approval, there have been zero votes taken to deny anyone he's requested. There's been one person who withdrew, but – that was up until this week when the appointee who for DEQ, Department of Environmental Quality, woman, is it Dion Deligatti, right?
Correct.
Am I saying that correctly?
Correct.
Okay. Whose background was what? She worked for one of the environmental groups.
Mm-hmm. Environmental so Defense Fund, yep.
Yeah, so they wanted to implement her, and they indicated, well, if you do that, we're not. They went through the Q&A with her, and it sounds like some of the leaders say that they were dissatisfied with her complete lack of knowledge of natural gas stuff, that they couldn't vote for her. They indicated that to Cooper. That was the death nail. They took the vote. She wasn't appointed. And so what did he do? He then named her the head of a new – is this a new position?
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
The head of essentially clean energy director for the state of North Carolina. So he created a position – which, by the way, if a Republican governor had done that at 155K, they'd be screaming right now.
I think the real question, though, is why was she passed over for that lifetime appointment to this $155,000 a year job? Yeah. That's really the outrage here, that she doesn't get a lifetime appointment, I think.
Yeah, and so the theory, because obviously everything is a deep, dark conspiracy, regardless of what Berger or Moore may say, is that Duke Energy and a couple others basically called the secret bat phone in the back room and said, don't let this woman in, while simultaneously issuing a press release saying that they have no problem with her appointment.
Right. Which, of course, of course they're going to do that. And Democrats ran around waving the statement saying, see, even Duke and Dominion Energy like her. Like, what do you think they're going to say? You think they're going to cross the governor and the DEQ?
Right. Yeah, there's not a chance. And so yesterday I kind of flipped over to her Twitter because I was interested, and she had pin tweeted the famous another Nevertheless, she persists, or
yeah,
whatever.
Nevertheless, she persisted. Yeah, Hillary Clinton's stupid thing. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So, is there a deep dark conspiracy? Do you think that she? I mean, what's going on here?
So what? All right. So what do you consider to be a deep dark conspiracy? Is it when special interests and organizations and corporations lobby government officials and politicians to get policies passed that they want? Would that include organizations like the Environmental Defense Fund, for example? Would that include Greenpeace? Mm-hmm. Would that include environmental organizations? Are they part of this deep dark conspiracy as well, or is it only a deep dark conspiracy when the interests don't align with Democrat prerogatives? Because, for example, Duke Energy, they've only funded one political convention in the state of North Carolina, and that was the DNC's national convention, right? That was not the Republicans. Duke Energy wrote the check for wiping away the debt that the Democrats ran up, because they are Democrats, that's what they do, and they ran up all this debt, and they couldn't afford their own convention in Charlotte. So back in, 2012? So is that a deep dark conspiracy? Like, all of the rules about coal ash pits and stuff, those were written by Democrats. Right. All of the permits and exemptions and all of that stuff that they tried to smear Republicans with, all of that stuff was written by Democrats. So who's part of the deep dark conspiracy?
Well, and let's not even forget that now with some of the one of the things that was predicted is all of those costs would essentially hit consumers. And that's now being allowed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, if you're Duke, that's a great thing from a shareholder perspective. So
now what I thought was hilarious was the defense of Deligotti that came from Julie Mayfield, our own esteemed state senator from Asheville, who is an environmental lawyer herself, formerly of the city council, who once during a city council meeting explained how she has zero understanding of economics. This was, she said, it may come as a shock to learn that I've never taken an economics class. And I said, no, actually, it's not really a shock at all. But anyway, she was on the floor of the Senate asking whether anybody in that body knew what Roy Cooper's natural gas strategy is, and nobody knew. And this was the defense of Deligotti, was that nobody knows what Cooper's plan is. So how can we hold her accountable for not knowing what Cooper's plan is when no one does? And then I got a message, though, from a listener named Andy, and he actually gave me a link to a Greenpeace story from 2016. And it's a video clip of Roy Cooper when he was running for governor. And they asked him, what do you think about natural gas and fracking? And he said, quote, I don't like it.
Indicator, yeah.
So there's the strategy, I guess. I don't like it. And when you're trying to increase the number of distribution systems in the state for natural gas, and you got a pipeline project that's being stiff-armed right now up in Rockingham, I want to say, right now, is up in Alamance, I think, the Southgate project, then, I think some senators do have some newfound concerns about the delivery of natural gas and other fossil fuels in a state, and whether a department that, by the way, this environmental activist that would be in charge of DEQ, do you think there might be an opportunity, maybe, just spitballing here, for a collusive settlement with an environmentalist group that sues the state? No, I know.
No.
It's possible.
No.
Really?
How dare you?
Okay.
Really, on the heels of an entire slush fund that was attempted to be created over a similar pipeline issue not that long ago? I can't imagine that. How dare you?
Yeah.
real quickly, it was funny because people send me links for some stories that he's interested in, and then we'll just kind of mesh up whatever's going on. And what is your fascination with Joe Biden on a bicycle, man?
Oh, I just saw it as the next chapter in the chocolate chip book.
Okay.
It was his wife riding the bicycle on, for her 70th birthday. And they did this photo op where they're riding bikes in Delaware. And, happy birthday, Dr. Jill. And, they're all waving and all this. And just the media coverage, it really gave off the ice cream cone coverage vibe.
Oh, well, you saw, I don't know if you saw this story, and this will lead into a quick audio cut. So yesterday at the White House, Annie Leibovitz was there to do a Annie Leibovitz photo shoot of Jen Psaki.
Yeah.
So who, during the course of her presser yesterday, had the following exchange.
On the White House cat, that's something that's still happening here. Our readers are asking us a lot. So I bet. I've been joking, although maybe it might be true, that we're waiting for a bad news day for that to come out. If you see a tail wagging coming out of the briefing room, you'll know something bad's about to happen. I don't have any update on the cat. I know there's a lot of interest.
So she just told them, you're a bunch of bootlicking idiots, and then one day what we'll do in the back is we're going to bust Toots' little ankle with a ball peen. We'll drag it out. We'll be like, oh, the cat broke its leg. Oh, no.
And you'll cover it. And that's the thing. Like, she has no fear of that message getting through to these people. Like, she's just rubbing their face in it. And I have no doubt that they will do this. And the media will just lap it up.
Okay, they'll bring out the cat and a laser pointer, and it will be nothing but that for 2 days, man.
Oh, pay no attention to the emails. Pay no attention to the Fauci email dump.
PeteCallenderShow.com. PeteCallenderShow.com. You want to get more stream of consciousness or...
That's the live streams, yes.
Yeah. I know.
Have you ever been over?
I'm trying to bait people into it.
Have you ever been over?
Yeah, I get your email. Okay. Don't worry about stuff. So, yeah.
I'm just curious if you ever show up. It's okay if you haven't. I mean, it's, you know.
You and I showed. I drove to your house and we went out to lunch, man.
I'm talking about for the live stream.
That's live consciousness.
That's
okay.
Live consciousness. All right. I got you. That's better than a live stream. That's right. I got to see
in
the car.
COVID environment.
Yeah, I got to see the car that a homeless man attacked in Asheville. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. All right, man. Appreciate it. We'll talk next week, okay?
All right, buddy. Thanks.
There you go.